Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Hispanic Heritage Month is September 15th through October 15th. It's when Hispanic and Latino culture and history is celebrated. A celebration isn't what some activists have in mind to mark Hispanic Heritage Month. They want a broader education of Hispanic heritage through an exposure of art, history, and even protest. The August 3rd mass shooting in El Paso was targeted at its Hispanic population. Americans are now more aware of the history of violence against Mexicans and Mexican Americans since the 19th century. Activists want to elevate Hispanic history and culture, especially now. Activists like Tony Diaz want communities across Texas and the U.S. to have more profound observations of Hispanic Heritage Month, not just for 30 days, but all year long. Diaz believes the distribution of art, literature, and culture can eliminate racist stereotypes. Tony Diaz is a Houston-based writer and is founder and director of the literary nonprofit Nuestra Palabra, Latino Writers Having Their Say. Diaz also proudly calls himself a libro traficante, a trafficker of books. Arizona enforced a ban on Mexican-American studies in state schools in 2012. That ban included a long list of books by Latino writers like Sandra Cisneros, Dagoberto Gilb, Sergio Troncoso, and Rudolfo Anaya. Nuestra Palabra organized caravans to smuggle books to Arizona students. Diaz explains the now-overturned ban should be one of the key highlights of Hispanic Heritage Month commemorations.
This wasn't something that happened in the 30s. This is very recent history. So I go out of my way to remind folks that this happened on our watch. I mean, luckily, our community banded together across the Southwest, and we had allies from all over the country, if not the world, of course. But I think it's important to remind folks that Arizona banned Mexican American Studies. There was an actual law that accused the curriculum of promoting the overthrow of the government. And we here in Nuestra Palabra, we were on a trajectory to become just some other ordinary nonprofit, probably one of these super nonprofits. But once Arizona banned our history and culture, we realized we had to join that struggle to overturn that unfair discriminatory law. And we knew that it was hard to get art, culture, and history into our community's hands. If that law was tolerated, it'd be almost impossible. So I keep the moniker Libro Traficante. You know, Houstonians invested the cultural capital to join that struggle. But this was only about 7 years ago that Mexican American Studies was a contraband field of thought.
And it wasn't until just about a year ago, maybe even less than that, that that law was pretty much overturned, right?
Correct. It took several years in courts for the ban of Mexican American Studies in Arizona to be overturned. But that also fueled our struggle for Mexican American Studies here in Texas. So last year you had Mexican American Studies endorsed statewide. And the year before that you had the ban of Mexican American Studies in Arizona overturned. But I think especially in light of Hispanic Heritage Month, we have to revisit those issues and realize that unless our community is very involved at every level, policies like this can gain a foothold. And I always think about this because it would have been a very difficult struggle if we had to fight two bans of ethnic studies, because typically, as we saw with the Arizona anti-immigrant law, SB 1070, they passed the Show Me Your Papers law in Arizona, and then other states copied it. One of my own main fears was that other states would copy Arizona's ban of ethnic studies, and I'm happy to say that together we put that in check. But all this is recent. American history has kind of moved along. We really need to revisit this, I think, especially in light of the racist attacks against our community in El Paso recently.
There is, I think, some irony in going back to this SB 1070 law in Arizona. I mean, they were saying that classes that focused on a particular ethnicity, Hispanic, Mexican American history in this case, was promoting the overthrow of the government. And there's centuries of history to back up that belief that still carries on today, that, again, borrowing language from when the Texas Rangers were lynching Mexican Americans, that Mexicans were invading Texas. This is the same kind of language that's still being used today by many white supremacists. And unfortunately, it's also language that maybe not quite that severe, but it's beliefs that carry on into certain school boards when it comes to determining what kind of literature, what kind of history they're teaching their students. Luckily, Texas was able to approve Mexican-American studies just in the past year or so. And I know you are heavily involved in trying to get Mexican-American studies into Texas public schools. Can you give us a little bit of history of your involvement and why that racist belief system that still carries on today, why it's so important to introduce these types of topics into schools to sort of try to make that slow change, beginning with our young people?
I also want to add to that, that it's a very complicated topic. So if I put on my hat as a professor, we can just keep adding layers and layers of discussion and issue. But then if I put my hat on as an activist, it's very simple. People can do something about this by opening a book. And I would argue that there were Arizona far-right officials who gained power by villainizing young Chicanas and Chicanos who wanted to read their history. And I would also point out that in my assessment, that was a direct attack on our community cultural capital because there were forces that wanted to keep our community from reading books by us, about us. And this is not opinion. When the Arizona Supreme Court overturned the ban of Mexican American studies in Arizona, they cited that it was discriminatory. So that's not opinion. That's a legal fact now. Additionally, they pointed out that there were politicians who wanted to gain power by using those stereotypes. And that was the case in Arizona when you had officials like Jim Brewer, who ran into power with this anti-immigrant wave. And again, I can call Sheriff Joe Arpaio racist because he's a convicted racist. In court, he was pardoned by President Trump. But these are all legal facts. He, too, gained power based on that anti-immigrant wave. And I would also point out that the terrorist in El Paso, his recent manifesto, repeated some of those same stereotypes against our people. And he used the term Hispanics were overrunning, taking over, etc. So it's these similar stereotypes that the court said some politicians used to gain the power, and that the El Paso terrorist in his manifesto used to justify his racism against us. So I bring that up because you can follow this trail of these stereotypes, and it's almost impossible to catch them all because you will have Texas school board officials. We send out an email blast to many of these folks, and we would get Texas sitting school board members send us notes back that would say, there's no such thing as Mex-American studies. There is only American studies, that we are being racist by asking for these cultural studies. First of all, for people that don't get how Mex-American is an identity that's American, it's simple. We're Texans, right? No one would dare question me as an American if I said I'm Texan. I don't have to say I'm Texan-American. In Texas, we should really have an affinity how our own local identities actually help hold up the national identity, for one. But I would also add then that some people don't even understand that these are stereotypes. So you may have officials that are believing these facts and then think, well, that field of study is controversial, or it's only negative thoughts, or worse, victim studies. On the flip side, I would also add that sometimes our own community embraces some of these. So we do think that we're not talented enough to have writers. Or we will say, well, we don't hear about more Latino writers because we just don't write that many books. And having founded Nuestra Palabra in 1998, we alone have worked with thousands of Latino writers. So I know for a fact that's not for lack of talent. There is structural discrimination that keeps our voices from being told. The problem right now is that stereotypes are killing us. Art, history, and culture humanize us. We really have to demand art, history, and culture for Hispanic Heritage Month and every month after that.
We are speaking with writer and activist Tony Diaz, Libro Traficante, and founder and director of the literary nonprofit Nuestra Palabra, Latino Writers Having Their Say. When we come back...
The attack on our community in El Paso has definitely refueled us, re-energized us to really push for art, history, and culture.
More with Tony Diaz next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.
These people were just shopping. What we're doing right now, they were doing, minding their own business, back to school, buying food, stuff like that. And it could literally happen anywhere, anytime now.
This was an outsider who came to our city to break our town, but he's not broken anything. He's made us so much stronger, and I think it's taught us to love each other more, to hold on to each other more, and to tell each other we love you more often.
I'm not usually a scared person, but right now everything seems to scare me. I saw a group of students in a crowd earlier today, and my heart started beating really fast, and it was new student orientation.
People want something to be done. They can no longer say, well, it has to be all or nothing. This whole thing of nothing happening after these types of tragedies, I think that's over, and it's time for the people to really set the new standard of this is the time. We want action. We want urgency.
Those are voices from El Paso, recorded days after a gunman killed 22 people at a local Walmart. The last two voices were El Paso historian Yolanda Chavez Leyva and LULAC National Organizing Director Randy Parras. Parras said people must demand action and urgency. That may be hard to do when people are scared to step into a crowded Walmart or speak Spanish in public for fear of being targeted. Action and urgency doesn't just happen in the political arena. It happens in those open spaces where some people fear to tread. It may be as simple as speaking Spanish in a restaurant or grocery store or a bus stop. It can be as personal as writing a poem or as public as singing a protest corrido or as quiet as reading a piece of Latino literature. Activist Tony Diaz is a Houston-based writer and is founder and director of the literary nonprofit Nuestra Palabra, Latino Writers Having Their Say. He says the Latino community must not retreat in fear. We must fully embrace Hispanic Heritage Month and proclaim our art and culture year-round.
This is a really profound way to empower people because really, in some cases, it takes one person sending a tweet to a TV station and reminding them that September 15th to October 15th is Hispanic Heritage Month and asking them what they're going to do. It doesn't have to be antagonistic. And what I think is powerful is as a poet or a fiction writer, you firmly believe that the act of writing that single poem or short story or essay does change the world. Most folks who are not in that mindset may not think that, but I think most ordinary folks will see that they can affect change. So for example, even just with the simple tweets and posts and calling folks, we've been meeting with the Museum of Fine Arts Houston, helping them consult on their programming for Hispanic Heritage Month. I think a lot of it, too, is folks don't realize it's coming. Folks aren't sure what to present. And also, just to be fair to non-Latinos, sometimes they think, well, am I appropriating? What do I call you folks? You know what I'm saying? Is this going to be interesting? How do we reach folks? And that dialogue has been fascinating. But here's what I want to stress. It gets so big that we do nothing. We have to do just these individual acts. But if we get enough of them, there will be actual changes that we can see. And I think anybody can have this influence on their neighbors or their media outlets, but someone's got to do it. I love this kind of stuff. If we don't get this in the classroom, we can do this in the community, or we can start these conversations with major institutions. That first step may be that simple tweet. Hey, Hispanic Heritage Month is coming. what are you doing? You do need to be careful, though. You may get recruited to help out. So you may become a volunteer, but that's what you asked for.
So, Tony, you've mentioned this a few times in our interview. What exactly is community cultural capital?
Community cultural capital, I would argue that Chicanas and Chicanos have been writing about that for generations. So like Gloria Anzaldúa, I think, talks about it indirectly. But sociologists like Pierre Bourdieu have been speaking about it very directly for decades. And of course, because he's an Anglo PhD with a French accent, they're going to believe him first, right? Basically, my definition of community cultural capital are any assets that our community members have that can be built on. So for example, our stories, our history, our networks. And I have a list of 100 Chicanas that'll spend $100 at a bookstore. That's cultural capital right there. And that's powerful. But we don't always know that. And I would add too, that we've seen the power of community cultural capital when our community pooled its resources to overturn the ban of ethnic studies in Arizona, and also to unite to get Mexican-American studies passed in Texas. So I would say that the tip of the pyramid is policy change, and community cultural capital is the base of it. But we basically have to learn how to quantify it, cultivate it, and accelerate it.
I think Hispanic Heritage Month might have more significance this year, especially in the wake of what happened in El Paso, which was such a shock. You know, I'm from El Paso. I'm very familiar with the community, with where it happened, with the people who it affected. And when you have a community that's majority Hispanic, that's a safe community where there is no gun culture as there is in the rest of Texas, to have somebody coming from out of town who wants to kill you for what you look like, it's jarring. And just knowing that, you know, your efforts to try to reach out to people to try to influence more art that's putting a positive spin on our culture, I think that that effort this year, particularly since the memory of that is just so fresh and the emotional impact is so fresh, it's got to have some significance. And I'm going to say it must have even spurred you even further to try to encourage people to act for Hispanic Heritage Month and beyond.
Without a doubt, the attack on our community in El Paso has definitely refueled us, re-energized us to really push for art, history, and culture. And we really do have to increase our efforts to humanize our story. And it really is a wake-up call in that I think there's a whole generation of Mexican-Americans who believe that just keep working hard, just keep proving that you can follow the rules, just keep contributing, and everyone will understand you profoundly. And what this racist attack in our community proves is that there are some stereotypes that are so powerful. It has created a racism against some of our community where there are some folks that hate our mere existence. And you can either basically cut yourself off from society or lean in even more. Yes, there are some politicians who are using these stereotypes to gain power, but these stereotypes are prevalent. I really think the only way to counter them is to create these other stories that are potent and profound. But I will tell folks, no one bats an eye when they understand that it takes several years of school to create a lawyer. And they get that. And those lawyers can defend us when there are crimes committed against us or laws like the racist law in Arizona that needs to be overturned. They don't understand that it takes that many years to create a poet, a writer, or an artist whose work will have an even just as a profound effect and actually edify our community, but it takes just as much work. So with Nuestra Palabra, we've unleashed thousands of voices. It's clear it takes hundreds of thousands of voices, and that's the path that we are on now. But yes, we're doing it inspired by El Paso. The people of El Paso are inspiring. They've got a history of art, that has edified all of us. When the Libreta Africana caravan was working its way towards Arizona, the people of El Paso received us profoundly, did a great event, inspired us, and we've had a connection with them ever since. So it is heartbreaking that that happened, but it is clear that El Paso strong means cultural strong, and we have to really push harder, and we're reporting for duty. So there's no going back. We understand that our work as artists is important, and we have to edify and accelerate our community cultural capital. And I think we're blessed to live in an era where our community is strong and powerful, but that can be expressed through the wonderful medium of art. Unidos.
Tony Diaz is a Libro Traficante, a Houston-based writer and the founder and director of the literary nonprofit Nuestra Palabra, Latino Writers Having Their Say. To hear more of our conversation, visit tpr.org. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham. And our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.